Okay, that's a bit of a big old welcome there, wasn't it? Big shoes to stand into now. Okay, well, actually, Jane said something that I'm not sure if it's entirely true just before that. She said that we're really well known to absolutely everybody in this place. But actually, I don't think that we maybe are. There are lots of you that have known us a really long time, like Andy and Jane, Phil and Linda, probably Terry and Steve, quite a long time. But some of you that might have only just be seeing this literally for the first time, and a few in between. So I'm just going to do a really brief background, then Julian's going to do a bit, and then I'm going to do a bit. So I think we should have some a little pictures, shouldn't we, Julian? Oh yeah, brilliant. Okay. So who we are. So clearly I am Sue, and I was raised in a family that we went to church with my mum. My mum was a believer. But during my whole growing up life, my dad wasn't. And so I was raised in a really moral home in that kind of way. And I went to church and my mum was a Christian. And I'm the eldest of three. I have a sister called Angie, who's a bit less than 2 years younger than me. And then we have a brother called Hayden, and he's a bit less than 2 years younger than her. Julian was raised in a Christian home. Both his parents were believers, and he has one brother. We grew up in Billericay. We didn't know each other until we met in 1988, although we actually both came to this school. Julian was actually in Angie's year. We also had combinations of Christian grandparents between our sort of families too. So that's the two of us. We got married in 1989. I can't, off the top of my head, I can't even remember what's that, something like 28 years, something like that, isn't it, ish? And we have four sons, okay? So we have Daniel. He's the one on the right-hand side there. He is 23 years old now. The next little cutie, that is Barney. This was taken in 2005, so he was a little bubba then, and he's now 12. So for those of you that don't know, he is the one that plays the cajon here at the front. Then we have Josh, and he is 21. And then we have Ben, and Ben is 18. Okay, so that's our family structure, who we are. And it's really important now for me to say, I'm probably just going to read this bit, because it's with a massive, massive sense of humility, actually, that we're standing here, and huge amount of gratitude. The gratitude to our parents, who all did the very best job that they could have in loving us and raising us. Every one of us is a product of our upbringing and our past lives, and all of us have baggage. None of us set out to purposefully cause any kind of upset or damage or harm to our children. But the reality is that for lots of reasons, sometimes that stuff happens or is perceived to happen. Our parents weren't immune to that. Into the mix came parents who'd served in the war, broken families, divorce, all kinds of other issues. We weren't immune as we grew up. And neither have our children been immune to that. Now, I'm not saying any of that to depress us, but to lead us really into the biggest debt of gratitude and thankfulness that we have, and that is actually to God, who is our perfect Father, who not only does us no harm, but is also able to heal our wounds and, massively importantly, as parents, to cover our mistakes and our inadequacies and our failures in our parenting with his grace and kindness. Julian's and my first response when we got this email from Andy and Jane asking us to preach on this was actually to say, thanks very much, but no thanks. Not because we're scared, but because we felt really, really ill-equipped, really, to be standing here, because like all of us, we are really super keenly aware of our own shortcomings and failings. We'd be here a really long time if we were to be totally honest about all of the ups and downs. So I'm actually going to hand over to Julian now, and he's going to do his little bit.
Actually, I'm going to finish off Sue's bit, because she's left out most of the pictures. If we go on to, you can see that's more a picture of them, a bit older. That's Sue's 50th, so that's when they're older. Now we've got a daughter-in-law. And now a grandson as well. we've both got, I think it's three headings that we want to share on, which we've done separately, and as we compared last night, very little overlap, so that's good. My first heading is not doing it alone, not doing parenting alone. And the first thing I put is the importance of praying grandparents. That we are so grateful, particularly to Sue's mum, but my parents as well, but for praying consistently for our grandchildren, and how we have seen the blessings as a result of their input, and the importance of the grandparents amongst us, I can say that now, to be praying for our grandchildren. And for those who are not yet, to start praying for your grandchildren in the future. Because you cannot pray, be praying, start praying too early of the role of the parents, of grandparents. And not doing it alone as well is the importance of learning from those who've gone ahead. As Jane said, we've known them for 30 years, and Phil and Linda as well. And they were always ahead of us with their parenting. So we could look at them and learn how to do things from them. Despite Sarah, we managed to do it quite well. So the importance of actually learning from each other, from your peers, of looking at those in the church who can actually encourage you and help you through those things that you're going through, which you think, oh, no one's ever experienced this. But actually they have. And Sue will be speaking a bit more about this later. And also the peers for the children. The importance of them having peers, particularly when they get to teenage years. We've observed this through the church, that those children that seem to have stayed in the church are those that had peers that they were friends with in teenage age. It's not a general rule, because actually two of ours it probably hasn't applied to, but two of them it has applied to. But it's just something to bear in mind as parents of that importance of children having people that they can meet with, which is why we're so keen, and we've had on several, a couple of Friday nights, the young people from this church to our house, just so they can spend time together. Gelling and spending time together is just so important. Just on that, we were at the Baptist church, and then we thought going to Hope Community Church in Shenfield. It turns out that actually, looking back at it now, we were going on sabbatical. Because we didn't realise at the time, but we were there for 18 months. And as we look back, we realised it was God's sabbatical for us in what we learned and what we did. But one of the reasons we came back was for Ben and Barney, because they didn't have any peers. They didn't have anyone to spend, for them, and the importance of that. Josh and Dan actually stayed, because they were that much older and they'd actually got involved. So not doing it alone. Secondly, love them the same, but treat them as individuals. Love them the same, but treat them as individuals. The importance of knowing what your children are called to and excel in, and not what you want them to do. As you know, I'm a pianist, and I really longed that one of my children would become a pianist. And I've ended up with two drummers. But they are such wonderful drummers, and God's hand is on both of them, Daniel and Barney. And it is just so great. I mean, Daniel, at the age of three, would be getting the saucepans out in the kitchen and banging them. He started at one, but he was even young. He's been drumming forever. And of course, Barney's had that experience because Daniel was around. But it's so easy to actually say, no, I don't want you to do that. Think of the neighbours. Do something quieter. But we encouraged him to do it, and both of them are doing it. And they encourage those giftings within the church. I mean, as you say, Barney's playing here. Joshua used to be involved with the Sunday school. Daniel was involved with worship. Ben's at the Baptist church, is involved with the VDS. But you see, seeing what their gifts are and encouraging them in that, to keep them involved and to build them up. And thirdly, in this, show an interest in what they are interested in. It's so easy, isn't it, to know what I'm interested in, and basically, I like this, we're all going to do this, when actually they're not interested in it. I mean, when we were younger, as most people know, I like my classical music. We did go to a few family concerts. I think it was the Philharmonia, wasn't it? The Philharmonia Orchestra. They did family concerts. And to be honest with you, the kids actually quite enjoyed it. Because it was only about an hour or so, but it was going up to London, and it was the whole thing. But as it got older, and I did take Ben Joshua to the proms, the proms. But as it got older, I realised they weren't interested, however much I wanted to. But as I say, it's getting interested in what they're interested in. For example, I'm not interested in football. I mean, it's... No, I know. You know, it's you know, a game in two halves, and that's about it. Two very long halves. But the but Ben has got was really into Chelsea. He's a Chelsea supporter, and so I actually became I became a Chelsea member so we could get tickets to go and watch it. And to be honest with you, I miss it now because he goes without me. And I think, oh, I actually liked it. But it was that actually, it'd been quite easy saying, well, I'm not interested, just go. But the valuable times we had, you know, just the two of us, has been really good. So show an interest in what they're interested in. And then finally, my last three, learn to let them go. This is the one that Sue says, this is the father's role. The mother's role cannot let them go, but she just. But the father's role to let them go, and this basically, it was the first week I was back to work after Daniel was born, walking down Liverpool Street Station, and I met Alan Mint, and we were talking about the birth and everything else, and he said to me then, "Now's the time to start letting go," and that stuck with me for my whole time. Of advice, that advice of letting them go. Not of saying, off you go, I'm nothing to do with you. But actually letting go of that grip. Giving them freedom, but with safe boundaries. We were just remembering yesterday, actually Dan started to walk to school by himself from the age of 8. None of the others did. He did. Because of his independence in that way. But we put safeguards in measures. And as Sue said, she phoned, because in those days they didn't have the full measures in place, so she phoned the school and said, this is what's happening. If he doesn't turn up, please ring me. Of course, he never rang, so we never know if he never didn't get there. But you know, it's that giving them the freedom to do that, which was interesting for him, particularly because he was a child that basically wouldn't go away from home. He wouldn't have sleepovers. He wouldn't have do anything. Even when he was the age of 16, he had to go on a German trip to Berlin, and that morning he had a nervous breakdown almost, and you know, a panic attack, so that's the word, of you know, I cannot do this. And I prayed with him that morning as I took him to the school, and he was fine, and he never looked back really after that. But he's like, say, is that mixture of he could walk to school by himself but not stay away from home. It's knowing what they can do and what they can't do and putting things in place to support them. And thinking about that, I was thinking about, to a certain extent, about Barney. I mean, as some of you know, I was here at Revival Church before Sue. It wasn't because she didn't agree with it or we had an argument or anything. It was because she was at the Baptist Church too with Barney and Ben, waiting till Barney was at an age ready that he could stay there by himself. The idea was that once he was in senior school, he would stay there, he would be able to stay there by himself, and then she could come and join me here. Actually, what happened in the end, Barney decided of his own initiative to start coming here by himself. And Sue then followed on after that. But it's giving them the freedom, but with safe boundaries. So we often talk about in the worship team of having freedom within worship, but there has to be boundaries within that to make people feel secure. Otherwise, complete freedom does not actually help people. So finally, your children may leave you, but you never stop being their parents. You never stop caring, praying, sharing with them, being there for them. As Sue said, we have four children. Two today at this moment are in the Middle East. One works in the city and one at school. Yet, most days, I'd say, we converse together through WhatsApp. That's such a wonderful device. And the banter between the brothers is as though they're almost in the room, considering thousands of miles apart. And we're looking forward to the summer when we will all again be together. That although we are beginning to spread out with thousands of miles between us, we never stop being their parents, who they turn to for advice and excited to share the exciting things that are going on in their lives. The role of a parent changes, but never stops.
Before I start my next bit, I'm just going to go a teensy bit off piece and just say, because he wouldn't say it himself, but actually it's really sacrificial, that thing that Julian said about, you know, the things that you're interested in. Because actually, you know, he's not at all sporty in anything. He has no interest in any sport or anything like that. But God gave us four sons. Now, you know, not all of them are sporty. You know, in primary school and everything, you know, they all did do the old basketball and all of that stuff. But it's been really sacrificial to actually kind of, you know, not necessarily have what you would think are really natural connections of things that you can really kind of hook up together with. So he's done a really, really good job with that. Okay. So Andy kind of framed his email with saying to us, you know, to unpack a bit of what it looks like to put Jesus at the centre of family life. What lessons have we learned and what principles have we established? So I'm going to try and do like a real whistle-stop tour now, because actually, as we've thought about it, it's a massive, massive subject. So I'm going to kind of shoot along this road and flag up some signposts and just pray that the things that God wants to touch each of us with, you know, will kind of stick in our minds. So in the first section, I've just entitled Prayer. So we started praying for our children before they were born. So one of the things that Julian did was I'd read a really good book called The Family Blessing by Ralph Garborg. And it was all about choosing a biblical blessing. You know, blessing in the Bible is a very massive thing right from the beginning. You know, God's blessing things right from the word go, isn't he, in Genesis, the epic beginning of the big storyline with Abraham, you know, and he says he's going to bless him, isn't he, with as many descendants or more descendants than the grains of sand and the stars in the sky. Blessing is a big theme with God. And so he prayed, and he asked God to give us a scripture for each of our children. And I find it really interesting. My mum once said to me, she said, if only I'd known you all as adults, I would have known so much better how to actually handle you and deal with you when you were children. And I know it's a weird thing to say, but actually it is true, isn't it? Because we, a lot of the time, we feel like as parents that you're kind of going blind a little bit, because everything's changed on a daily basis when your children are small, especially. No phase lasts forever, even when it feels like it does. And, you know, but actually, and we don't fully know what kind of people they're going to grow up into. But I look at the blessings that God chose for our children and gave to us, and each one is so perfect and so pertinent to who they've ended up to be and what they're doing. It's amazing. So we prayed that blessing over them daily. When I was pregnant, Julian used to put his hands on my tummy and pray that blessing over the babies. And we did that through their lives at home. Prayer triplet. Julian's mentioned it. It was an absolute lifeline to me. For years, Jane and Linda and I actually used to pray together for our families and our children. We put a handful of rather lovely looking photos up there of our family. The last 24 years have not been one big gooey, coochie coo, undiluted run of pleasure. It has to be said. You know, parenting is a tough journey. There are wonderful ups and there are some difficult downs. that we have to be real about this. Not everything is a mountaintop experience, is it? And amongst our children, some babies come out, and it's wonderful because they've read Super Nanny's book, and they not only do it, but they make improvements on it. You know, we all know people like that. They're very difficult to know when you've got small children. You know, it's not easy. And then there's other babies that read Super Nanny's book and chewed it up and spat it out and wrote their own special version. And, they came out and they were determined to bring that one to bear. And so you know, we butt up against each other right from the word go. And then you get all those that are in between. You know, our children, there's rhythms and things that we can generalize. You know, we can have what they say is normal, but we're not machines. As I keep saying to Angelica with Gilad, our lovely, gorgeous four-month-old grandson, you know, he's a little person. He's not a machine, you know, and there's a rhythm to his life that's developing, but you know, when he sleeps for 10 minutes less than he should do, because you think he should sleep for an hour and a half because he's done that for 3 days and you could get on and do something, you know, but we can all get a bit like that, can't we? So I just say to people, get yourselves into a prayer triplet. Pray with people, one person, two people. It is a lifeline for the blessing and for the moments when you need the box of tissues. Thank you, Jane and Linda. And Andy and Phil, you four people know what you've stood with us over the years and walked with us through. And it is of inestimable worth. Pray with your children. Be creative. I've said, look for ways that you can teach and model the normality of a relationship with Jesus. Walking to school. Did a lot of praying walking to school. We only have a short walk, 10 or 15 minutes, but it's all kinds of things. Just be normal with it. In the car, that's a great one. You know, don't shut your eyes, clearly, but pray in the car. Fantastic thing to do with your children. This is a bit of a school one. I'm probably going to show I'm really out of touch because they've probably invented a new acronym now. I've put share ideas. Be a magpie. It's a big thing it was when the kids were in primary school. Be a magpie. Magpies allegedly steal things from other people and hide them in their nests, I think. That's probably where it comes from. But it's about pinching other people's good ideas. You know, don't think that you've got to go it alone and come up with every, you know, deeply spiritual thing to help your kids love Jesus all by yourself. Because it's just that's hard work. Talk with other people, share things that have, you know, what's worked, you know, pick those things and think, I'm going to give that a go. Maybe it'll work. Maybe you want to tweak it. Maybe it won't. You try something different. But, you know, we are a family, aren't we? So avail ourselves of that. I've written, read stuff. I like to read. I put down, go to seminars. But basically, you know, do that kind of stuff in some of the summer camps and stuff that we did. You know, I used to go along to those things, and I found it in particular an absolutely massive blessing, particularly when my kids were beginning to be teenagers. And there's a wonderful, wonderful lady called Christine Perkin. They passed one of the sort of offspring churches from Holy Trinity Brompton. And I think they've got 3 or 4 children. They're probably in their sort of 20s and 30s now. And she does this incredible seminar on teenagers. It's so, like, down to earth and normal. And I've been to that. I've been to it 3 times now. And each time I went, it's the same person doing it, and she's doing the same stuff. But I have gone to it, and I have listened to what she said and looked at the stuff with the glasses on and the ears open for that particular child. Because my children are all really different, I've refreshed my memory by viewing it through the lens of Daniel and then Josh and then Ben. I probably will go when I get a chance to do it with Barney. I found it so helpful. I'd really recommend that. There's a brilliant book by Rob Parsons, I think called Parenting Teenagers. That gave me some real epiphany moments that just shaped the way that I looked at my children. There's this one chapter, it was given to me when Daniel was 13 as a Christmas present. We were away for a family Christmas the year my dad had died that year, and my mum paid for us all to go away as a family with my brother and his family, and my sister-in-law bought it for me. And I read this book, and we went out for a day trip, and we were coming back through this car park, and a woman was walking with her dog on a lead, and there was a man who had what I call one of these killer dogs off a lead. The horrible dog went for the dog on the lead, and it was basically savaging it, trying to kill it in the car park. The noise and the screaming from the owner was horrific. My mum, bless her, she's a warrior, she's got an umbrella, so she was whacking the bad dog with the umbrella, trying to get it to release its grip from killing this other dog. Not very effectively, but she was trying. Hats off to her. I was an absolute gibbering wreck, trying to gather up all our smaller other children that we'd got off the ground, getting them out of the way. And I watched my 13-year-old Daniel walk towards this death match that was happening in front of us, and with the most gentlest, tenderest hands, like, just was bending down and trying to get hold of the nasty dog to get it off. And in that moment, everything in me wanted to scream at the top of my voice, "Get away from him, you stupid boy, he's gonna kill you!" All I could think was, he's gonna tear Daniel's face off, or savage him, or like, and it was the words "stupid boy" that I could hear in my head that I wanted to, and in that moment I had this kind of, as I say, it was like, it really sticks out in my mind, because I thought about this chapter that I just read in this book that spoke about how teenagers' brains, loads of stuff starts to actually happen physiologically in their brains during those developmental years. And they're wired differently, and they don't have the same kind. That's why they get into all kinds of scrapes that they do, because risk becomes something that they look towards, and they don't have the literal brain power to be working out that's a really dumb idea, it's not going to end well. And he speaks in this book about the importance of understanding that, and being careful about how we, the kind of setup, the boundaries we put around our kids. And in that moment I knew I needed to keep my voice, my mouth shut, never easy. And after the whole event was over, later on I spoke to Daniel, because in that moment I saw something in him that I'd never really, I don't know, something, I saw a glimpse of him, and I saw a willingness to put himself in the place of danger and to do something sacrificial. And I recognised that in me, I just wanted to run away. I thought that I don't like what I see, and the dog's going to die, but I don't want to get bitten or hurt myself. But I saw something different in my son. And it scared me, because I thought, what if he's one day on a train and somebody pulls out a knife? My instinct is to say, go the other way, Daniel. But what I saw in him was that he would intervene. And I knew it was really important that God said to me, you need to encourage him and praise him and speak about what you've seen in his heart. Don't tell him to be like you. That was a really big wake-up moment. I recommend that book. It's really easy read, but that's my little dog story that goes with that. I want to massively big up another book that we had when our children were young. It's called What Shall We Pray About? And it's written by Andy Robb. It is absolutely brilliant. It is a fantastic book. For those of us that have known Andy a really long time, it's really cool, because as we look through it, we can actually see ourselves in it. He denies it. We can see Lake Meadows. We can see Andy's wallpaper in the house that they were living in then, and their sofa and the layout of their house. We can see it all in the church. It's brilliant. But it's such a good book. You know, be creative. You know, if you're stuck in a rut with your young children about what they pray, what you pray about, get something like that and do it. It's got great pictures. And, you know, I've got that in the loft for doing with Gilad and all the others, hopefully, that will follow him. Oh, see, I've got one that's worth a lot of money now. I'm going to get him to sign it. He's also written absolutely shed loads of other really brilliant books. He's not ever standing up here and telling you that, but if you've got primary school age children and older and younger, search out some of the books he's got. They are fantastic. It's brilliant resources, and we've got it within our own church. Excellent. This is a message to myself, and I'm going to privilege you to listen in on what I'm going to tell myself. Don't give up. We all have prodigals in our families. Keep praying. This is in the prayer section, isn't it? We are on a lifelong journey. Just because they leave home at 18, we're still their parents and they're still our kids. Now we're grandparents and we've got our feet, because our family spans quite a big bit. Three came quite close together, then there's a bigger gap than Barney. And because we, you know, I've come to realise that although I'm quite a nervous person by nature in many ways, I clearly have some sort of reckless streak because we've got four kids. And I kind of like to obviously live a little bit on the edge, because that's what that sort of thing brings. We didn't stop at two. That would, you know, sane people might do that. But yeah, well done. So we've got our feet in lots of different camps. We're grandparents. I've got a child, you know, up till the summer, we had one in, you know, or two in secondary school. So at the moment now I've got one in the city. The other one in the Middle East, trotting around Lebanon at the moment, heading back to Cairo this week. That's a prayer challenge. And I've got a 12-year-old, you know, who's still quite young and needs us. And now we've got Gilad. You know, I've got many different hats on. You sit here. You have got and will have many different hats. You know, changing shapes of family and seasons. But keep praying. Okay, section two, choices. Right at the beginning, we knew that we wanted our faith to not just be a Sunday thing, because it wasn't like that for us as individuals. So we didn't want it to be like that for our kids. But what does that actually look like? What that meant was that we included them in our spiritual feeding, I've sort of put it down, and what we exposed ourselves to. Daniel was born in June, the 17th of June, and he had colic. You know, it's not fun, is it, for the first 3 months? It's really not fun. But at 6 weeks old, we were there at Revival Camp at Ashburnham with my brother and sister-in-law, run by Ichthus. I've got vivid memories of walking around this marquee in the evening outside on the wet grass with Daniel, you know, having the epic screaming fit, you know, that sort of goes on for about 3 hours, that you're just thinking, oh, once this is over, it'll all be all right. We weren't the sort of parents that tried to carry on having a single, you know, a couple's life when we've got kids, because I don't agree with that. That's another whole story. But we did, it's about your perspective and how you do it, isn't it? We did include them in what we did, and we did it intentionally. We exposed them to that as normal stuff. It's normal for us, so therefore we wanted it to be normal for them. We, you became a Christian when you were, what, 18? Yeah, I think I can't remember now, 21 or something anyway. But we got spirit-filled as adults further on in our journey. That was our experience, but we wanted for them, for their normal to be. At that point, the expression of spiritual gifts, anything like that, in mainstream church and the church we were in, it wasn't mainstream experience. If you spoke in tongues, it was a big secret. You did it under your breath if you were brave, and it just wasn't, it didn't happen. We weren't like that. We're not in a church like that, are we? We're not, sitting here this morning. But we modelled to our children that it was for them too, not something that you have to wait till you're 21 to get. Okay, so we prayed openly in tongues for and with our children. In fact, when I said this to Julian last night, I was like, oh, which one of them was it? One of our children used to say, will you pray for me? Will you pray for me in that, will you do that? They absolutely loved it. They just used to lay in bed and just say, do that, you know, pray in tongues. And, you know, and just encourage them to do it. He used to lay there going, it's brilliant, but that's how they, you know, it's normal. We start like that, don't we? We had open discussions about stuff. Obviously, we did all the normal stuff with them. You know, we read the Bible with them. We prayed with them and for them. We talked about what stuff meant. We listened to Bible stories. We had the Bible on audio tape. Daniel had that. He couldn't go to bed in silence. So as well as other stories and songs, there was, I don't know, probably until the CDs literally wore away, because it went on probably for a couple of years, he listened to the New Testament every single night as he went to bed. And he just used to carry on, because obviously it's quite a lot of hours long, while he was asleep. I think that is, I know, I don't think I know, it's all gone in, it's gone into his spirit. But rather than be listening to that, you know, than other stuff sometimes. CDs and songs in the car, you know, at home, worship. I'm blessed. I'm married to a worship leader. I love to worship. I don't play an instrument. I love to sing. I love to worship. Worship was a part of our normal family life in lots of different ways. This is sensitive. For us, we made a choice about the priority of worshipping together as a family on Sundays at church too. I don't think we did religious. You know, I don't recall ever saying to our children, no, you can't go to a party on a Sunday or anything like that. But for us, being in church together was a priority, worshipping. We chose to say no to doing some other things so we could do that. Julian was always at that stage pretty much playing or leading. I have many, many flaws, many things that I wish that I hadn't done and things that I know that I could have done a lot better in our marriage. But I think it is probably true to say that I was delighted. I knew long before I met Julian. I don't know, because it didn't make sense when God said to me, you're going to marry a musician, somebody who's involved in worship, when I wasn't a pianist or something, or a worship person. You know, I wasn't a musician myself. But it was a choice, because it meant that pretty much every Sunday I was left at home with one, two, then three, then four children to get dressed, breakfast, up and out and into church, because he would have gone to church really early. I think I can honestly say that I was never resentful or angry or difficult about that. It was a real choice that I made, because it was his calling and I knew that. I'm not great at being very servile, so it's not that I'm really good at that stuff anyway. But I never wanted my children to hear me say, for goodness sake, I'm left here with all of you and Dad's just gone off to church on his own and I've got... There wasn't any of that. There was plenty of other stuff. As I say, we'd be here a long time if we went there. But, it was a choice that I made to facilitate that and to be there with all the children, toddlers, babies, car seats, all that goes with it, but worshipping. And we didn't exclude them from that. They were really good. They used to come, sometimes they would come and they would stand, they knew what they could do. They could come and stand next to him. They could rest their hand on the keys. Not when it was really quiet, because they sort of, and start playing. And they didn't do it. We gave them, they had a good amount of boundary and freedom. And they responded to that. It was never like, no, you can't go on the platform because Dad's up there. And, nothing like that. We chose not to handle it like that. We made opportunities to expose them to stuff, to see that there is more than what you might have had so far. We went to New Wine loads of times. Absolutely love it. Bit sad we can't go this year because of all that's happening with our family. But next year, it really wants to be a priority for us to get back there. Absolutely brilliant things for the kids. Specific youth events and stuff like Soul Survivor. We've included them in our own journeys, particularly our journey with, much into all the Israel stuff. It requires time and effort and some compromise. We've never wanted to just drag them along and say, you've got to sit there and suffer. So you have to be a bit savvy with it, because they can engage with stuff. I look back and recognise that, some of the initial, the initial seed for me was sown when I was 15. I wasn't even a believer. But my mum said to me, do you want to come to this meeting? It's called Jews for Jesus in Ilford. And, they're God's chosen people. And there's a meeting happening tonight. And I said, oh, yeah. And I went along. I cannot remember a single thing about what went on at that meeting. But I know that somehow the fact that I respected my mum and her walk and her, at that point, what my mum said was right, it was, a seed was sown. And so with some of this stuff, as we've taken the kids, I don't regard it as bribery. It's understanding that, they may have sat there through, because it's not necessarily designed for children. They're not boring things that we've taken them to, because we wouldn't want to be at those. So for Barney, he's absolutely happily come along. He's really enjoyed the stuff anyway and that. But make sure you've got something in your bag that's for them to do. Get them a nice bit of lunch. Cafe Nero is our favourite place down the road from the Emmanuel Centre when we go to all those things up there. go in there, treat them to something nice for lunch and, you know, make it a bit special. You know, it's about, you know, so that you look forward to that. How long is it? Oh, we're going to Cafe Nero in a little while. You know, it's, as I say, we are not perfect parents who've raised these children that like to sit on pews and, you know, it's, and we've, but you say we've had it, but it's, you know, I just encourage you, do that stuff. Get out there and make it enjoyable for all of you. This is a real good one. We did, we were part of a home group with other families with children. And we used to meet on a Friday night. We would go early. We would often have a meal together. There was 4 or 5 families. Yeah, shed loads of kids. We had the most, so of course we made them, you know. Some people only had 2. They're the sensible ones. But of course we've got a lot. It was brilliant. After tea, eventually, so they'd be playing and all that stuff. Time for us all to catch up and whatever. We used to put our children to bed. Ha ha. So upstairs in all the different bedrooms, according to ages and sex, we would have, you know, the older, the bigger boys in there, Sammy and Dan and Simon and Josh and all of that. They'd be in there like, on the floor on a pillow on a whatever, you know, an airbed, a sleeping bag, you know, and then the girls in that room and the little ones and the baby. And then we would have a Bible study. And these things, because none of us are very good at being disciplined, you know, so it's like 11:30, midnight, or whatever. So, and of course, there's only 2 of us, clearly, and 4 kids. So, you know, we were the ones that other people had to be lumping our great, humongous, sleeping children out through the house and getting them into the car and all that sort of stuff. But that's what I mean about, you know, maybe some of you think, oh my goodness, they're absolutely insane. But, you know, we obviously like to live on the edge. But we did that stuff. We did it together. Some of our most, like, really enduring friendships for the children and for us. Out of that has sprung so many things. Holidays together, time spent together, you know, relationships forever. You know, that's another thought. Okay. For the readers, I love to read. Julian loves to read. It's a bit sad to us that despite my best efforts, there's only really one of our children that is an absolute avid reader. But for the readers, I brought books to challenge and inspire them. I always used to read the books first. You know, autobiographies. There's some great ones out on there. You know, lives that have gone from darkness to light. That as they get older and that kind of thing. Do that sort of thing. Okay, quick. Principles. We have 4 sons. Basically, sometimes it's felt like boot camp. Tremendous amount of vying for top dog. Well, depending on the mixes that we've got of gender and how many, all kinds of things. But what we need to understand is to understand the dynamics of the family and the need for some of them might need space and alone time. We live in a really small house. 3 children always were in sharing one room. Wasn't great. It wasn't great from the space point of view, but it was brilliant because it means that you have to deal with stuff. Nobody can go stamping off in their room, slam the door and get all huffy and not come out. You have to deal with stuff. Now, I'm not saying you've all got to put your kids in shared rooms, but what I'm saying is, you know, we live in an area where it's really actually quite uncommon in Billericay for children to have to share rooms. My children basically had no friends that had ever had to share a bedroom. Comes as a big shock when they actually have to, you know, and then I can't sleep in a room that's got someone else in it and all that. Mine could sleep anywhere because obviously it was like being in a zoo. So, you know, but what I'm saying is that we had big personalities and we had to identify what each child kind of needed within that. So these are little key things. I'm really coming in really quickly now. There was a key value for us, kindness. There wasn't always kindness. But that was a key value for us, to be kind. And I had a really big thing about how we use our words. The boys will probably stand up here and tell you all kinds of stories about our mum going on about how using unkind words is like sticking a knife in someone's heart. But that is because that's how I probably used to present it to them. But because it's true. It's true, isn't it? Isn't it? When people say things that are mean and unkind and horrible to us, it's like an absolute stab. We don't want that for our children. And so, you know, and there were seasons in our life where it feels like all you are doing is policing stuff. You know, I'm being real here. As I say, it wasn't 24 years of undiluted pleasure. But we had that principle to try and do practical reconciliation. being able to say sorry. And when things got really difficult, I used to say to them, you know what I'm going to say, don't you? And they'd go, oh no, Mum's going to make us give each other a hug. Because I used to say, when you feel you cannot possibly touch someone or hug someone when you feel really angry, you just can't do it because they're like rigid like a board. You have to have been able to let something go. You have to have been able to say sorry or ask for forgiveness before, and then in that hug there can be that reconciliation, you know. I'm just trying to unpack that bit quickly. Make active times to be nice. That's hard sometimes. It can feel like an uphill struggle. We've got a thing that we do. Come and ask us later about what we do on Valentine's Day. Birthdays, use those opportunities to speak into your children's lives and to get each other, get them to say something nice to the sibling. To pray for them, to identify something. Be, as I say, like we should have, like we could have like a massive thing where we have loads of ideas. I've got in capital letters, meal times, super important. Most, like in all those growing up years now, it's harder almost, this little stage we're at. Not every meal literally in the week is eaten together because of what Ben's doing and Barney, but very, very, as I say, we can talk about that another time. Meal times, massively important. So much communication. So much goes on at family meal times. Create individual time to value each child. Know, get to know what feeds that child's spirit, what they need. One-to-one time with mum and dad meets their different needs. We do a special thing with all our boys and Julian when they're 13. He's been surfing in a wetsuit in Cornwall with Daniel. This is how different our kids are. Surfing with Daniel, God answered amazing prayers. 2 days of surfing and surfing lessons. Dan on the phone, so disappointed to me, back in Billericay. Like, it's really hard, Mum. All I want to do is stand up on the surfboard. I could only imagine like how frustrating it is. I was literally on my knees like, God, I'm in your mercy and kindness. I just ask you, will you give him a chance to stand up and ride a wave in? Just once, while they're down there for that. Amen. He answered that prayer. I was so excited when I got that answer. Just, that was requiring a lot of faith. I didn't have that faith. Yeah, the God of miracles. Yeah, but you know, for Josh, this is how different our kids are. We went for tea in Fortnum and Mason. Yay! I didn't have to get into a wetsuit, which was good. Neither did Julian. And we did that. Ben went up the Shard and for some expensive meal in some posh restaurant in London. This is my parting shot. Celebrate whenever you can everything that they do, all that God has put in them. Celebrate them. Do it as a family. Do it together. Find your own ways and then share them with other people so that they can get really good ideas. Come in.
Now you know why we asked Sue and Julian to do this morning. Thank you so, so, so much. I know Sue will be kind of doing hospitality and stuff, but grab them afterwards if you want them to pray for you. And it's never, never, never too late to start investing in your kids. I've learned stuff this morning. I've got things, okay, I need to start doing that I haven't been doing and my kids are grown up. So don't ever think it's too late and you've missed the boat. There's always opportunity. So thank you so much. Thank you for being so honest. Family is important.